I'm Mike Pesca, in for Leonard Lopit on WNYC. The world economy depends on the internet to function, but companies and individuals are losing an estimated $1 trillion a year to internet criminals. How long before cybercrime threatens our entire system? What could be done to stop it? You know, that's a big and almost unanswerable question. So in his new book, Fatal System Error, The Hunt for the New Crime Lords Who Are Bringing Down the Internet, Joseph Menn tells a ripping good crime yarn. There are two tech wizards, one for the forces of good, the other a nefarious hacker, and they do battle. We follow the white-hatted techie to his future adventures, trying to thwart web bombers and hijackers. The book is published by Public Affairs Books, and Joseph Menn's in the studio today. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
So your main character is Barrett Lyon. He's a smart guy. He's really a kid. And at times, it seems like he is the man who stands between successful web commerce and chaos. How'd you find Barrett?
Well, I was a reporter for the Los Angeles Times covering tech security. And in the early 2000s, things just were getting worse and worse in a really dramatic way. But it was complicated, and it was hard to get people to pay attention to it. You know, at first there were, you know, some website would go down, eBay or Yahoo, and it was a teenager bragging somewhere. And that didn't, you know, it was sort of a reminder of how fragile this new economy was, but it wasn't really scary.
Didn't wreck anyone's life or anything
It didn't make Yahoo happy, but, you know, it wasn't that big a deal. And then there were these viruses, and maybe they shut off your computer. But the viruses got better and better, and they were all about commercial intent. It was about making money for the first time, and there was a professionalization of it instead of vandalism. And so I was writing about that, and that was more important, but still hard to explain to people. And then these websites started getting hit by extortionists, and there were bad guys that would email and say, "Hi, have a nice day. Your website go down. Please send $50,000 to Latvia. Thank you very much." And their websites would stay down. And these guys had hired Barrett to try and get back up.
The websites themselves reached out to Barrett. How'd they find him?
He had defended he was working for a small security firm, and he had defended an odds maker in Las Vegas against a similar attack before. It turns out that gambling firms, which were Barrett's first clients, are really good ones to try and extort money from. They speak the language, and they have a lot of cash, and they don't have a lot of infrastructure, and they're not going to go to the feds.
Right, especially because we should mention that gambling sites, especially sports gambling, is prosecuted. They have to be offshore. Other kinds of gambling sites are – poker is now being prosecuted. So they're illegal in the United States. They operate in places like Aruba and Costa Rica, and as you say, they're vulnerable. Also, oftentimes, they're mobbed up themselves. And like you say, they speak the language.
Yeah. And Barrett, you know, not to get ahead of ourselves, but Barrett found out the hard way that let's just say he went after the Russian mob. He infiltrated the Russian mob on purpose, and he infiltrated the American mob by accident.
And he did this from his home in Sacramento?
He did a lot of traveling. He racked up some miles. He was in Sacramento in his home there. He went to Costa Rica a lot. There was a big bunch of computers that he was running in outside Phoenix on an Indian reservation because somebody thought that that would give them some legal protection. He was all over the map.
And he himself, he's a smart guy. As a teen, he caused a little chaos of his own. This is the standard story with a guy who's into tech and hacking. You got to find out, you know, what you could do, and you usually, often, you know, like I say, cause a little chaos. What did he do? He hit AOL once?
Yeah, he kind of knocked out AOL and Disney for a few days. I believe it was 99 or so, 98. It was a long time ago, and he was really young, like 13 or so. But yeah, the FBI gave a call.
Now, do almost all the security good guys have a little mark like that in their past?
If they're really good, yeah.
Yeah. Which is weird because, you know, top policemen don't get into that job because they're shoplifting. Is there something, I mean, we as a country, as a civilization, as a society, need to train security people. The only way to get them is the ones that had the opportunity to go bad or to go good, and the ones that decided, all right, I'm going to be a white-hatted hacker.
Yeah, we should be doing a lot more of those. We should be doing a lot more recruiting of folks that are kind of on the edge. I think that might happen. I mean, hacking is, I think, is cooler than it was.
And there are
opportunities now because people are seeing how bad the situation is. There are more opportunities to go straight here. I mean, one of the reasons, there are a number of reasons that there's so many bad guy hackers in Russia and Eastern Europe, but one of them is that there aren't very many legitimate career opportunities. So a lot of them go to crime as just sort of a logical career progression.
And this one Costa Rican site, he, and I heard you guys were both on Fresh Air and explaining it. It got a little technical, and I've read your book about it. But he kind of found they were a little lazy. They were a little sloppy, and he pretended to be one of them. And then eventually he traced the main guy back because he logged onto a different site under a URL that he had registered in his own name. Am I getting it about right?
That's about right, yeah. you got to remember, the bad guys don't have a lot of fear for good reason. I mean, particularly in Russia, the hackers going after Western sites do not get arrested. And so they were talking on what's called an internet relay chat, and that's where they commanded all these drone computers called bots to attack the gambling site website. And Barrett got onto those chat rooms, and it took months, but he sort of gradually convinced them that he had his own bots, and he was just checking where they were going, and it was pretty cool stuff. But he got a first name that Ivan was in college in Russia, and once he logged on from his actual home IP address, which was one mistake, and then like you said, there was a URL, a website that he'd registered. And he had used his real name to register that website.
So I know the FBI swore him in as an agent for the FBI. Or sorry, an agent of the FBI, meaning what?
Meaning he's a deniable asset. He was somewhere above informant and below employee. He was acting on behalf of the FBI, but the FBI would deny it if it ever came up.
But was the idea for the FBI to do the prosecution when it came to that? Or they just wanted to know what was going on in the world of bad guy hackers?
The FBI, that was more of an educational thing. And it went on. They actually closed the books on him as an informant / agent a couple days ago.
Really?
They kept going back to Barrett for his expertise on a whole variety of topics. But in this initial prosecution that's sort of the heart of the book, the FBI didn't really get involved. They were curious, some agents more than others. So they got very involved in who Barrett had been working with, the gambling sites. But they weren't much help in going after the Russians.
It seems, as you describe it, the Brits were a little bit better at that.
The Brits are great. For a few years, they really seemed to do everything right.
And we should also say, gambling, making a bet on the Super Bowl, legal in Britain, they don't have to make their servers offshore, and I've got to suspect that's got to be part of why it's easier. I mean, this is always the theory. Once you legalize something, you'll get better law enforcement, and it'll be less shady, and it'll come out of the shadows.
I think it'd be a really good idea if we did that, to be honest. People are going to do it in any case. They are doing it, and they're doing it with a lot of sites that rob them blind.
Was it the Brits that actually got to the Russian guy in question with the Costa Rican site?
Yeah. Yes. What happened was that the FBI introduced Barrett to the Brits, and the Brits cared because the Russian extortionists were going after first the Costa Rica, Aruba, Bermuda sites, whatever, but then after legitimate British companies that were publicly traded and worth hundreds of millions of dollars. And so the Brits cared a lot, and the Brits had just decided they were going to make e-commerce safe, and they were going to go after the stuff, whatever it took. And they formed this elite crew called the National High-Tech Crime Unit, and it was like an FBI, but devoted only to high-tech crime. And they took the best of the best and whatever it took. And because almost all of these sorts of cases, almost all serious hacking cases go overseas, where it is a pain to get anything done, they said, okay, we're going to go to Latvia, and we're going to go to the Ukraine, and we're going to go wherever we have to go before we need anything from those people. We're going to take them out to dinner. We're going to find out what their problems are. Do they need more computers? We can give them more computers. And we're going to build personal relationships so that when the stuff goes down, we have somebody we can call. And that's what happened in Latvia and in Russia. And they sent an ace over to Russia on the trail of Barrett's hackers with his information.
And the FBI, meanwhile, there were a couple agents who liked him, but at best they tolerated Barrett, it seems like.
Well, they were interested in what he had, and they were interested in his ability to get inside some of the hacker world. But they're not going to go and get anybody in Russia. That's just not the way it
works. Well, the FBI also, I mean, if I was Barrett, it seems, as you describe it, Barrett was really underappreciated by the FBI, and he'd go to London and be put up in a hotel and be, you know, at least complimented for his expertise.
That's
and
true.
He liked working for them more.
That's true. I mean, pretty much everyone I talked to in law enforcement, prosecution, and on the Russian side, liked dealing with the Brits more than they liked dealing with the FBI.
And so if we call this crime, you know, sometimes I hear it called like cyber terrorism. A lot of analogies are made. I mean, imagine if we combated real terrorism by A, not having any professionals involved in the prosecution, like relying on, you know, highly trained private experts. That'd be weird. And imagine if we antagonized everyone with the capability of infiltrating a terrorist network. So we might call it cyber terrorism. We don't treat it anywhere near as seriously as literal actual terrorism.
No, we don't. I mean, one of the important points of the book is that we are really, really far behind. We're in a lot of trouble, and we're not dealing with it in the right ways. And there are things that we should be doing on a diplomatic level, political level, certainly legal level, and a technological level. We need to do some re-architecting of the internet.
Now, as far as the diplomatic level, why would a Russian hacker not feel prosecution in Russia? Just because they have bigger fish to fry?
Well, there are a number of things there. Okay, first of all, there's a culture that permits a lot of corruption. I mean, having been there myself, even the good cops are on the take. It's just a question of from whom and how much and what they do as a result of it. So you can usually buy your, you know, if you're a small-time bad guy, you can usually buy your way out of a situation. The bigger problem, though, is that the Russian government has found these people with hacking skills and hundreds of thousands of captive computers to be useful for military operations and political operations. So right around the time after these hackers actually got caught, got prosecuted because the Brits, you know, went there and they put all kinds of money and effort into it. But right after that trial, there were some attacks on Estonia, and a year after that, attacks on Georgia on official government websites. And the people behind that were some of the same people that were involved in this, that were sort of higher-ranking people in the cyber underground.
This is Mike Pesca on WNYC, in for Leonard Lopez, talking to Joseph Menn, author of Fatal System Error, The Hunt for the New Crime Lords Who Are Bringing Down the Internet. So from Russia, let's go to China for a second, because Google just pulled out of China, and they had a wary relationship with China because they knew China was going to censor them. But the last straw for Google was when a bunch of Gmail accounts were hacked, and that caused them to pull out. This had to have been at least okayed by the Chinese government, from what you know?
Yes. This is a very sophisticated operation, not really in the code. The attack code is good, but it's not amazing. What was really impressive was the amount of research that went into this, the reconnaissance effort. So they didn't just say, let's go hack Google because they've got human rights activists' email accounts and we might find those useful. They said, okay, who within Google has the seniority to have access to this specific kind of database? Okay, that's his name. Who are his friends on, I don't know, Facebook or an instant messaging service or one of the other big social outlets? Okay, probably one of those friends who does not work within Google has lower security. We'll hack him using a previously unpublicized vulnerability, and then we'll pretend to be him, send a link to our target within Google, and it'd be something that he'd be likely to click on. It'll be topical. It'll be chatty, and bingo, guy clicks on a link and you're in.
So the government did this? The government was okay with the hackers?
I can't tell you whether it was a full-time employee or a contractor or military or civilian. All I can tell you is that it had government approval. It was a government operation.
That sort of thing does not happen in China without the government knowing about it.
No, I mean, you can't surf to pictures of Donald Duck without the government knowing about it. You don't pull off an operation like this.
The weird, and right now Joseph Menn writes for the Financial Times. He wrote for the LA Times. I don't know if you track the New York Times' coverage of that, but it took me a while, and I read a bunch of stories. Really buried in there was the question, well, did the government know? It was reported as Google pulled out and hackers got these accounts. I'm like, well, what did the government know? It took me a while to figure out. I guess they're implying that the government must have known. So why the wariness on...
Well, we don't have smoking gun proof. Yeah. What we have, and that's, you know, that's the reason why sometimes we need books instead of newspaper articles. You gotta draw the dots together, and that's what I've tried to do in the book. That's what I've tried to do to some extent in my articles at the Financial Times, and that's what the government needs to do. The reason that this got so much attention is that Google came out and talked, which companies normally do not do. When
Google's a big enough company. They're not an offshore betting company who pretty much wants to lay low and just make its money.
Right.
Yeah.
And Google never said explicitly it was the Chinese government. What they said was, we've been hacked. We've lost some bad stuff. And you know what? You stop censoring us on our search engine or we'll pull out. And so that was kind of a head scratcher. But the only people in charge of whether they're going to censor or not is the government. So they're saying it's the government problem. They're kicking it back to the government saying, look, without explicitly saying it, because they can't prove it, they're saying, you know, you stop censoring us. We know you're behind the hacking. Leave us alone or we walk. We as a government need to be doing a lot more about what's happening in terms of state sponsorship of hacking in China and Russia in particular.
Russia's a little different from China, though, because it's not as if every hacker in Russia is okayed by the government beforehand. It's just that after they find the hackers, they'll turn the hackers to government agents.
Well, everything's gray here. Yeah. So in China, not everybody is working directly for the government. There's some freelancers that are sort of competing to get the attention and favor of the government. And there are people that are motivated by patriotism, and that's it in both countries. There are some patriotic hackers. Another key difference is that in China, they're largely about military secrets and military capability and commercial secrets. They want to, you know, if you're a car manufacturer, they want to steal your know-how so that Chinese car manufacturing will be better. Russia, it's largely about our bank accounts. Then it's also about having the same networks of computers that are used to send that were first used for spam, and then these denial of service attacks on the gambling sites and other sites we talked about. Those same computers can attack the website of Garry Kasparov, whose site mysteriously crashes all the time because he's a dissident, or a mainstream media outlet in Russia that has run an interview with an oligarch who's out of favor. Suddenly they crash. So Russia's using it in different ways.
Mm-hmm. If we use the cyber terrorism analogy, I mean, to combat terrorism, we try to infiltrate terrorist networks. We try to arrest terrorists. We also protect ourselves at home. It's why it takes 2.5 hours to get on an airplane. What are we doing to protect our own computers if we are really following that analogy?
Nothing competent. I'm running out of people I know that have never had something go wrong with their computer. And it used to be if something went wrong with your computer, it's because some program didn't agree with some other program and you didn't have the driver and it stinks and you have to take it to Best Buy. Now, you don't know what's happened. You don't know what's been taken out of your PC. But you can no longer assume that unless something you notice is going wrong, you can no longer assume that what's on your PC is probably safe. You should live your life as if everything in your PC has been sliced and diced and resold in the black market for years, because it probably has been. More than half of our credit cards are out there. It's interesting when we get to that level of debit cards, which are more dangerous to be in the wrong hands. But to answer your question, you should have an antivirus that updates automatically. You should have a firewall that updates automatically. You should have an operating system that updates automatically. And then maybe you'll get hit and maybe you won't. And if you do get hit, maybe you'll find out about it and maybe you won't. We're not doing anywhere near enough.
And the last question is, I know that the Obama administration is talking about cyber deterrence. Are they a lot better than the last administration? I know you're saying they're not doing enough. Do you get any sense of really at least elements taking it seriously?
There are elements that are taking it seriously. It was heartening to lots of people who do this for a living. When Obama gave a speech in May that said that this is a major national priority. It was disheartening that he said then that he would appoint a cyber czar, and it took him until 2 weeks ago to have somebody take office.
The guy who they appoint?
Howard Schmidt.
And well-regarded?
Reasonably well-regarded.
Reasonably well-regarded. Well, there you have it. I'm very happy with that. Fatal System Error is the book. The subtitle is The Hunt for the New Crime Lords Who Are Bringing Down the Internet. And Joseph Menn was my guest. Thanks very much for joining me on WNYC.